This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The Sefer of Iyov, the Book of Iyov, starts off with a description of who the man was. Tom v'yoshol v'yirei Elokim v'sor miro. He was perfect and straight, a yorei shemayim, and one who removed himself from evil. And he had 10 children, 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he was very wealthy. V'holchu vonov v'osu mishte beis ish yomer. And his sons went and made a party, each one at his house for a day. Vasholchu v'koru l'shloshes achyoseim, and they sent and called to their 3 sisters to join them, lechol v'lishtes imoim, to eat and to drink with them. The Chazal discussed what the occasion was. There are different views, but it's certain that it was a Seudas mitzvah. It was a wedding, according to some. Whatever it was, it was certainly a Seudas mitzvah. Vayehi ki hikifu yemei hamishte, and it was when the days of the party were over. Vayishlach Iyov vayekadshim. Iyov gathered them together. Behishkim baboker, and he got up early in the morning. Behelo oilus mispar kulom, and he brought oilus korban oilo. The korban oilo is that korban which one burns totally. Nobody gets anything out of it. It's the only korban which nobody gets any benefit from. All the kohanim get is the skin. There's no meat itself. Nobody gets anything from at all. Mispar kulom, according to the number of all his children. Ki Omar Iyov, for Iyov said, Ulai chot uvonai, maybe my sons have done an avera. Look what a family he had. All he could say was Ulai. Maybe, who knows? 10 children. And all he can say is maybe they've done something wrong. Uveirichu elekim bilvovom. And maybe, Rashi translates this as they have cursed the Ribbono Shel Olam in their hearts, which we need to understand. And the Targum Yonason says they angered the Ribbono Shel Olam in their hearts, in their minds. And so he would bring Korban Oilos. Kocho yase Iyov kol hayomim. So Iyov used to do all the days. Whenever these children used to make these parties, that's what he used to do. One can imagine what type of a Suda these occasions were. They were certainly of the nature of Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha v'giru l'fon of bir odo, while serving the Ribbono Shel Olam with joy. There must have been great joy at these Seudas mitzvahs. It was also giru l'fon of bir odo. They rejoiced before the Ribbono Shel Olam with trembling. It wasn't some kind of wild rejoicing. And yet Iyov is worried. Ulai chotu vonai. Maybe, who knows, maybe my children have done something wrong. What have they done wrong? Maybe in their minds they've angered the Ribbono Shel Olam. I was present, says Iyov, I know they did nothing wrong in their actions. But maybe in their minds they did something wrong. And it's on that the Medrash says, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, Ein ho'elo bo elo al hirhur halev. There are different shittas among the Tanoim as to exactly what function the Korban Oilo played. In what way did it improve a human being? Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says in matters of the thought, Ein ha'oilo bo, an oilo only comes al hirhurei halev, for thoughts of the mind. Rabbi Levi Omar Mikra Molehu, Rabbi Levi says, it's a mefurish apostle, can he dash on the apostle, can Yechezkel, where the Ribbono Shel Olam criticizes the Bnei Yisrael for that which comes onto your mind. And on the one hand we see that they criticize for a mere thought, and on the other hand we also see that the Tanakh uses the word which ties into the Korban Oilo. From who do you learn this? Mibonov shel Iyov, from the sons of Iyov. Shenemar, about whom it is said, Ulai chotu bonai uverichu elokin bilvavom. Maybe they have, my sons have sinned and they have angered the Ribbono shel Olam in their minds. And what does Iyov do to fix the matter? Vehelo oilis mispar kulon. He brings korbonus, he brings a korban oilo for each child. So we see from this, as Rabbi Shimon Yochai, that the korban oilo corrects the defects of a hirur halev, of an incorrect thought. That we are responsible for our thoughts is not such a chiddush. That is clearly so. That's even what we think we are responsible for. Good. Are we punished for what we think? The Tash does not. On the surface it would appear not. With a few exceptions, the Ribbono shel Olam does not regard a thought as an action. And yet we see that it does need correction. It needs a certain kapora, it needs some kind of atonement, which is achieved through the korban oilo. And secondly, why is Eov only worried after Sudas Mitzvah? What about the rest of the year? Why is he so specifically worried about a funny thought during the time of the Sudas Mitzvah, where they're sitting around the table? And you can be quite sure that the men sat around one table and the women sat around another table. Whether there was a mechitza or not, I don't know. But the men were sitting and talking Divrei Torah. If one can imagine what level the conversation was on. Tosfos says, we mentioned it I think last week, Tosfos and Brochus, that one of the reasons for having salt on the table when one makes a mozi is not so much for the time of the mozi, but for the time in between the washing and the making a mozi. Since it is a time where there can be no communication between people, there's no mitzvahs being done. During that few moments, just between, you can't talk in Divrei Torah, you can't do a chesed, there's nothing you can do, you're completely suspended in mid-air during the time of washing and eating. And if it weren't for the salt is there to remind the Ribbono shel Olam, we have a deal. Just be patient with us, we'll soon make a mozi, and we'll sit down at the table, and once again there'll be mitzvahs taking place. But we see again that Chazal are more worried about the time before the Suda where nothing's taking place, than at the meal. At the meal we assume things are good, mitzvahs are taking place. And here Eov is worried after the Sudas Mitzvah. Ulai chotu bonai. Maybe my sons have sinned. And it's from here that we bring the raya, from here we bring the proof that the oilo functions for bad thoughts. A bad thought cannot be viewed disassociatedly from actions. Our thoughts and our actions are very closely linked. There are religions and philosophies which emphasize thought and de-emphasize action. There are other religions which emphasize action and de-emphasize thought. The Torah stresses the connection between the thought and the action and the influence that they have on one another. Action on thought and thought on action. The Moral says in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, the Osid Lavoi, in time to come, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sefer Torah, the Ribbono shel Olam will open his Aron Chodesh and take out the Sefer Torah, the Menichu Becheiko, and hold it against him, the Omer, and say, Lemi She'osak Bo, anybody who dealt in this, Yovu V'yitul Tzchore, come and collect your reward. All of a sudden all the non-Jewish nations crowd the Ribbono shel Olam to come and claim their reward. The first one that goes in is the nation of Rome. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Ribbono shel Olam to them, B'mai osakten? What part of the Torah did you specialize in? What was your area? Omim lefonov, they say to him, Ribbono shel Olam, Harbe shvokim taknin, many marketplaces we established. Harbe merchatzoi sasinu, many washing houses we built. Harbe kesev zov harbeinu, we established business and we enabled trade and commerce to take place. And why did we do all the Seder Omers? Just that the Jewish people should be able to sit and learn in comfort. That's all we wanted. We wanted to support the Kodalim and the Yeshivas. That's all we wanted. Someone in HaKadosh Baruch says the Rebbeinu Shem Shoytim Shodoylam, you silly people. You did it all for yourselves. You made marketplaces, not for the Jews to buy their needs. You made it as a place for the zoners, for the prostitutes to be able to wander around. That's what you wanted it for. So that you should be able to lie in the baths and the all that you did for yourselves. You built bridges in order that you should be able to take a toll at the bridge. The cities was in order to build up an army. The walls, that was my business. I organized the walls. You had nothing to do with it. And so on. What do we see there? It says, the author from Slabodka, we see that as good as the actions were, the fact is people benefited from them. They did build bridges. This was Yishuv Olam. They built up the society. They built bridges. They built roads. They built bathhouses. And the truth is the Yidden benefited from it. So let them have a bit of a claim to Chesed. Okay. They didn't do it for the Jews' good. You see, they get nothing. Absolutely no schar for it. No reward at all. Why? Machshav. It's the wrong intention. So we already see the extent to which the intention affects the validity of the action. An action can be wonderful, but where its direction is, the direction of that action and the purpose of that action is determined by the machshav, is determined by the intention, not by the action alone. Of course, the other way is also no good. Remember, we discussed once the Kuzari, who was having these dreams over and over and again, that he had very good intentions but no good. He wasn't doing mitzvahs. Both need to be there. But at the moment, this evening, what we're talking about is actions without the right intention. To what extent does the intent affect the action? And here we see that an invalid intent can completely nullify the validity of the action. The action in no way connects up to you. True, you built bridges, and it's true others benefited from the bridges, but others did not benefit from your bridges. That's how you've got to look at it. There's no connection between you and those who benefited from it, because that wasn't your intention. That's a little bit difficult. You remember the Chovas HaLovas says in the beginning of Shaar HaAvodah that even though a parent might intend in raising his children for his own good, in having children, in raising them, he doesn't do it as an act of chesed. He does it for his own good. And how much more so a master who buys a servant, a slave, and he feeds the slave. He certainly is doing it for his own good. He's not doing it as a chesed to the slave. If the slave wouldn't work for him, he wouldn't feed him. And yet, the Chovas HaLovas says there how we are obligated to honor a parent and to subject oneself to a parent, how the slave is obligated to honor and to subject himself to the master, and so on and so forth. How much more so, he goes on to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, who does it only for us who has nothing, no benefit out of it whatsoever. And we see there that there is a context of giving credit to somebody, even if he didn't intend it for our own good. And that concept, in fact, is dealt with in a different Gemara in Bava Basra. Where the Gemara says on Daf Yudam Beis, Omolein Rabban Yochanan Min Zakai Le Talmidov. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to his Talmidim, Bonai, my children, Ma'u shomer ha-kosuf, what is pshat in the posuk? Tzedokah tereimim goy, tzedokah elevates a nation, v'chesed l'umim chatos. And the chesed, the kindness of nations, is a sin. Seems to be a contradiction. If tzedokah elevates a nation, how can the kindness of nations be a sin? And various answers are given, most of them all along the same vein. Tzedakah elevates a nation, that's the Jewish people. And he brings the raya that the goy means the Jewish nation. And the kindness of nations is a sin. All the tzedakah and kindness which the non-Jewish nations do, that in fact is a sin. It's not chesed and tzedakah at all. Which ties in with the Gemara that we've just learned. Because they do it only to make themselves greater. They're not doing it for us. They're not doing it for anybody. When a nation does tzedakah, you must know that there's some other intent behind it. When you've got nations in the Scandinavian nations, for example, who are struggling themselves, who have high rates of unemployment, who've got massive problems of their own, and they're busy giving vast sums of money to some terrorist organization in Angola, it's not tzedakah. It's not classified as tzedakah. Chesed l'umim chatos. When a nation gives tzedakah, you've got to know that's not tzedakah. Ask the Gemara. Would Avid Hachi like tzedakah Gemara? Good, so they've got their own ulterior motives. Is that not absolute tzedakah? But Tanya, didn't we learn how Imes Tela Zeli Tadaka Bishvil Shiyichu Bani Ubishvil Sheeske Leilam Habu Arez at Sadi Gomu? The first Tadaka. And he says, I'm here by giving 100 rand to Tadaka in order that my son should survive, that he should recover. Or in order that I should get an Oilam Habu for it. Absolute ulterior motive. Didn't we learn that that is Sadi Gomu, that that's absolutely okay, that's perfectly righteous, there's no impediment in such an action? Answer the Gemara, Loi Kashya, can be Israel, can be Evid Tichovi. It depends. It's the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew in this matter. One has to bear in mind that when the Gemara talks about a Jew and a non-Jew in this matter, a non-Jew who rises above this is the kind of non-Jew who really needs conversion. The kind of non-Jew who wants an Avodas Hashem completely separated from any ulterior motive is a non-Jew who really wants. A non-Jew satisfied without coming to conversion, it's a different level of operation. And the Gemara says, Rashi explains, and when a Jew says, this is tzedakah in order that my son should survive, if his son doesn't survive, he doesn't feel like that was a waste of money. This tzedakah didn't work. And he says, tziduk hadin, atzud tzomim poyle. I don't understand it, but the Ribbono Shelolam is right. That's something fundamental to a Jew. A non-Jew has a bit of his relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is not that straightforward and that absolute in its trusting that he's prepared to say, it doesn't make any difference, I gave the tzedakah to the Ribbono Shel Olam, my son didn't live, it makes no difference. If he felt that way, he would have given the tzedakah without conditions. If he gave the tzedakah with the condition, it's because he wanted the condition. A Jew is not a politician. Even when a Jew plays politics, he's not a politician. When he says, this is tzedakah, on condition, he starts making a political conditions, he doesn't mean it. Give tzedakah, you can do with it what you want, it doesn't matter, as long as the tzedakah is given. When a non-Jew gives political conditions, he means those political conditions. That's the principle, that's the basis under which he's operating. A Jew operates on the basis, and we're talking about a certain type of Jew, by the way, there are many Jews who fall into the category of non-Jews in this matter. And likewise, the other way around, they're probably non-Jews who fit in the category of Jews, but we're talking generally. The Jewish mentality, the Torah-Dikki mentality, is I do it for the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's who I'm working for. I only have one balabos, that's the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I'm giving tzedakah for the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's it. I would like my son, as a schus for my giving the tzedakah, I would like my son to survive. Doesn't survive, it doesn't matter. A non-Jew doesn't only have one balabos. A non-Jew has many balabatim. In the olden days, they had different Aveda Zoras, each god for all sorts of different things. Today, we've become more sophisticated. They've only got three, a trinity. But a trinity is also a lot of balabati. And once you've got more than one balabos, you've got to be a politician. How do you satisfy them all? This one says this, there's a New Testament, there's an Old Testament, and you've got to satisfy them. They contradict one another. And you've got to play the one off against the other. You've got to start being a bit of a politician. The only way you can operate totally without politics is if you have one balabos, not two. The man who you work for, the man in whose business you work for, is not your balabos. You work for the Ribbono Shel Olam. The man who pays you is not your balabos. You work for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Your prime minister, your government, is not your balabos. You work for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then there's no place for politics. The moment a person doesn't quite know who his balabos is, and when he's looking at his employer, he's got to smile because he pays him. And when he comes to shul, he must smile because the Ribbono Shel Olam keeps him healthy. And when he goes to his doctor, he must smile because his doctor makes him well. And he's got to keep everybody happy, he's got to start playing with politics. And when he makes a condition, when he makes a tnai, he means that condition. So we see that a thought can completely invalidate an action. You can have an action which is inherently good. The action is to the benefit of mankind, it's to the benefit of society. But it wasn't intended that way. That lack of intention, if it would be total lack of intention, that means I really, if I would get nothing out of it, I wouldn't do it. When a parent does good for a child, when later on the parent very often gets a kick in the pants for it, he doesn't think to himself, I should never have done the kindness in the first place. He doesn't. Okay. That's how it is. What can you do? If one would really think I should never have done the chesed and I would never have done it had I known I was getting nothing out of it, that totally invalidates the chesed. It is no chesed whatever. That's the power of machshava. It is a tremendously destructive power. Just as a good thought can build an action into something very great, so a wrong thought can take a magnificent action and can totally annihilate it into something which is absolutely nothing. This can have quite serious ramifications. With little people, the damage of a bad thought to an action is less than with big people. For example, you go to the market and you buy, about 10 kilos of pumpkins, and they want to weigh it for you, and you see the African attendant there takes this bag of pumpkins and he throws it on the scale, and they read the scale and they write something and they give you the pumpkins. And then you come to Peculiar Pharmacy and you see there's Mr. Cohen weighing and every little drop carefully and balancing, nothing gets thrown onto the scale. Why? It's got to be accurate. And you think, my goodness, I must have overpaid for the pumpkins. Look how they threw them onto that scale there. Who knows what damage they've done to the scale already? The answer is it's a different scale. That's a scale for pumpkins and this is a scale for fine things. And so it is with human beings. There are human beings with pumpkins and there are human beings who find. And a human being who's a pumpkin, a bad machshava, isn't going to damage it terribly much. But a human being who's fine can be terribly damaged by a bad machshava. Let's see how it affects the actions. Rabbi Chadida ben Tradyo Neber suffered terribly. He was called by the Romans for teaching Torah, and the judgment was, Gozru olov nisreifa, says the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. They paskened burning for him. Val ishto laharigo, and his wife was to be killed. Val bito leishev bekubo shel zonus, and his daughter was going to be captured and would have to practice prostitution. And the Gemara goes through, what exactly did they do to deserve this terrible end? What about the daughter, says the Gemara? Val bito leishev bekubo shel zonus. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, for Rabbi Yochanan said, Pam achas hoysoi bitoi mahaleches lifnei gedolei roimi. One day the daughter of Rabbi Hananya ben Tradyon was walking in front of some of the big shots of Rome. Omru, and they happened to comment, Kamon nois si yoseho shel ribozu. How attractively this young lady is walking. She has such a nice walk. She has lovely bearing. Miyad diktakobif siyoseho. Immediately she walked still a little bit nicer. She was a little bit more careful. She overheard them, and she walked even nicer. She improved her bearing still more. That was her aveda. What's the terrible thing? What did she do? Did she eat chazer? Was she mechalel Shabbos? Did she talk Loshon Hora? Did she damage anybody? Did she hurt anybody? Did she flirt with them? She didn't even talk to them. What did she do? What was the terrible thing? That's not a pumpkin scale. That's a finely tuned chemical balance. The slightest posula machshava, the slightest invalid thought, already shakes the whole thing up. Why? This young lady obviously had nice bearing. She always had nice bearing, wherever she walked. Why did she have that nice bearing? Could be for one of two reasons, or for a mixture of both. Either she was the daughter of Rabbi Hananya ben Tradyon, she knew who she was, she had nobility, she had aristocracy, and she felt it was important to have bearing. And that's the way she was raised, that's the way she was taught. She's the daughter of a Talmid Chacham. That's one possibility. If that was the case, the comments of the Romans would have made absolutely no difference to her. She would be walking the way she is because she's a Bas Talmid Chacham. She's not going to walk still better because she wants to impress Romans. She's not doing it to impress me, but she's walking this way because she's satisfied. That is the correct way to walk. So what's shy to walk still better? It's not, there isn't such a thing. If she's walking to impress people, if that's why she developed this very fine bearing, then of course, anybody who comments about how nicely she walks will encourage her to walk still more nicely. So she's not being punished for that little bit of improvement, for the fact that for those moments she improved her bearing still more. She's being punished because that shows that in all the years that she'd been walking so beautifully, there was a touch of Shelo L'Shem Shamayim. It wasn't all because she was Rabbi Hananiah ben Tridion's daughter, it was also because she was looking for a nice husband, possibly, or for some other reason, who knows. And for that she has this terrible, terrible punishment. We wouldn't be punished that way. We're not good enough to deserve such punishment and such individual care. It doesn't make that much difference to us. But to the daughter of Rabbi Hananiah ben Tridion, that wasn't expected of her. Here again we see the possibility of a bad thought to totally destroy all the good that had been developed all over the years. If that hadn't happened, she would have got tzchar for her the way she walked. If she wouldn't have responded to the comment of the Romans, she would have been rewarded for the way she walked. It would have shown that the way she walked was only the Shem Shemayim. The response to that comment, that thought, shows not only that now am I walking to impress the Romans, it shows that all this time I've been walking to impress the Romans, or whoever else might be looking. And that puzzles the whole action. And she suffers. To what degree does this destroy an action? The Basilis Yeshorim says in his definition of the Midas HaTohara, this is the Midah of purity. And I must stress, as I've stressed over and over again before, that the purpose of this shiur is not necessarily to expect that we are holding at the level of the Mesilas Yeshorim's Tahara yet. But it is necessary to know that that level exists. There's no way that we can have any kind of understanding of the Gedolei Yisrael of today or of the Gedolei Yisrael of previous generations if one doesn't understand what the ladder of spiritual achievement is. Nor is there any way that one can hope to achieve greater and greater levels if one doesn't know where one's aiming to. Maharaj Shiva always used to say, using slightly different terminology, that if you buy a ticket to Cape Town, you can get to Kimberley, you can get to Dar, you can get quite far. But if you only buy a ticket to Klerksdorp, you're not going to get further than Klerksdorp, that's for sure. We at least have to buy the ticket to the end of the journey. We at least have to believe that we're on that line, that that's where we're trying to get. If we see the end of the railway track at Klerksdorp, and that's the end of our Hasoga, there's no chance of ever getting further. If we see the end of the railway track at Cape Town, then it's possible to achieve great heights. The Mesilas Yeshorim says, HaTohoro, Hi Sikun Halev V'Hamachshovis. That is the correction, the perfection of one's heart and one's thoughts. And that's what David HaMelech says, means when he says, Lev Tohir Beroli Elikim. Ribbono Shel Olam, create for me a pure heart, not just pure deeds. There must be purity of heart. And he goes on to discuss it and to describe it. Let us look at the effect of ill intent in the various different types of mitzvah. Firstly, like the Romans, say a person builds a bridge or a road or sells wares, opens a business, and his machshavas are for himself. I'm not doing it to make a contribution to the world, I'm doing it to make money. That's it. How serious is it? So if it's 100% to make money, and that means if he wouldn't be making money out of it, he wouldn't be doing it at all, so there's no mitzvah in it. There's no mitzvah that is attributable to him. If he's doing it to make money, but also he takes pleasure out of the fact that in addition to making money out of it, he is also making a contribution to society, then the mitzvah already starts relating to him. Although he's doing it for his own good, but at the same time people are benefiting, a contribution is being made, and the mitzvah is related to him. If he does a mitzvah, let's say, he says Kriya Shema, without any intention of trying to impress the Ribbono Shel Olam. All he wants is other people should see and hear him. That's really what he's after. So he covers his face with his hands and he screws up his eyes and he shrieks, Shema Yisrael. Why? People should see how good he is. How much of a mitzvah is that? Says the Basilis Yishorim, Hora Mikulom. The worst of all is Hu She'enenu Oved L'Shem Avodah Klal. When a person does an avodas Hashem, does something in the service of God, and it's not really for the Ribbono Shel Olam at all. Elo l'ramos b'dei ha'odom, but it is to cheat people. U'laharviach kovod u'momon, because he wants to gain respectability or money out of this. Bezehu she'omru voi, about him it is said, noyach lo yishenepcho shil yosu aponov. It would have been better for him. English translated quite well here, if he'd been smothered in his own placenta, should never have been born such a man. It's worse than not doing any mitzvahs. He's actually worse off than if he would never have been born. That's a mitzvah. He's doing the action. He's doing the action with absolutely no intent, with absolutely no kavanah, and the action does not relate to him whatever. It has no validity at all. Then you get the man who's a mixture. He's doing it for the Ribbono Shel Olam, but he's also enjoying the respectability he gains out of that. On that says the Mesilas Yeshurim Chazal say, Lo Yilum Yasek Odom B'Toyro Mitzvah Shelo Lishmo Shemitzvah Shelo Lishmo Bo Lishmo. Even if it's not Lishem Shemayim 100%, he should still involve himself in it, because from doing it that way he might one day come to do it the right way. It has no validity in itself, but educationally it's valid. It might lead him to the right thing eventually. But there is another type of mitzvah. Take for example the mitzvah of simcha. The mitzvah of simcha is one of the most difficult mitzvahs to fulfill altogether, because it's terribly dangerous. There is a terribly narrow line between what we call hilulus v'kalus reish, which is rowdiness and lightheadedness, and simcha shel mitzvah. Very narrow line in between. Rowdiness and lightheadedness is chilul Hashem. It's one of the most severe isurim that there is. There's nothing as severe as that. That a frum Jew, that a ben Torah, that a Jew altogether should be seen rowdy and coarse. There is no hetzer for that at all. It's one of the worst things he could do. He should rather lock himself up at home and see nobody. And simcha shel mitzvah is a great thing. Simcha shel mitzvah is a yom tov, a Shabbos. Simcha shel mitzvah, all the seudas mitzvahs which we've discussed, all the great occasions in the ben Torah's life are simcha shel mitzvah. What happens if one is at a simcha shel mitzvah and it's Shelo Lishmo? I'm sitting at a simcha shel mitzvah, at a siyum. I've finished a mesechta, I was invited to be present, a bar mitzvah, a yom tov for a Shabbos table, a birthday party for those who celebrate birthdays. It's a sudas mitzvah, and it's not 100% Lashem Shemai. What is the risk? The risk is not that, okay, so no mitzvah is done. The risk is that if it's not Lashem Shemayim, the simcha remains, just the mitzvah you take out. And when you've got simcha minus mitzvah, you've got hilulus and schot and kalus rosh. Then you've got rowdiness and lightheaded. Then you've got a complete degeneration of the human being, just because the Shelo Lishmo is taken out. The effects are extremely damaging. The Mesilas Yeshurim says earlier, in the levels where we are expected to be holding, that one of the things which cause a lack of zehirus, zehirus is meticulousness, watching oneself, alertness to keep the mitzvahs. which is the foundation, that's the first perek of the sefer, that's where it all starts. To develop sufficient alertness just to notice that one is about to do something wrong. That's the hirus. And he talks about the first impediment to the achievement of Zahirus, which he says is fairly easy to handle. The second one, Achasheni, Yinehu Kosher Moed. The second impediment to Zahirus, which is the first step of the ladder, you don't get past Zahirus, you get nowhere. The second impediment is terribly difficult. And this is not somebody who's learning or Sameach, or one of the new yeshivas, who says it's terribly difficult, I'm finding it difficult. This is Ramesh Chaim Lutzato, who says it's terribly difficult. A man who spent his entire lifetime trying to achieve it. He warns us, this is hard. That's lightheadedness and cynicism. When there's too much jocularity, that's an impediment to the achievement of the heroes. Kimisha Taveyabom, somebody who is drowning in this lightheadedness. Who Kimisha Taveya Bayom Hagodil Shekoshem Oidlihim Olit Mimin. It's like somebody who's drowning in the deep sea, it's very difficult to get out of it. Hine Hatzchoik Hu Ma'abed Eslev Ho'odom. Because laughter destroys the heart of a man, the mind of a man. Shekfor In Hatam Vahadeya Mishelis Boy. Taste and knowledge no longer affect him. Have you ever heard coarse people telling jokes? It's worthwhile, in order to understand this piece of Masilas Yeshorim, I don't recommend it to anybody, I'm saying retrospectively it's a worthwhile experience, to land up in a bar, in a drinking place, and hear the people, just listen to them, and wonder to yourself, are these, do they hear what they're saying? Are they able to see one another? The complete distaste, the bottom of the bottom level of any kind of intellectual justification and any kind of intellectual achievement and admiration in the type of jokes that they tell. And the laughter breeds. As A tells a joke, B laughs at it, the next joke is going to be worse than that, of less taste and of less intelligence. And they'll laugh again, and the third joke will still be of less taste and less intelligence, and so it goes. It breeds coarseness. It removes the bottom level of civility. It removes taste and it removes intelligence. It becomes, all of a sudden, one can gain respectability without taste and without intelligence. These are the same men who tomorrow will be sitting in their offices, and if one of their clerks says something which is unintelligent, they'll fly down their throats. What are you talking nonsense for? At last night, were you talking nonsense? You were sitting around talking a lot more nonsense than I'm talking. That's when I was having a drink. All of a sudden, mutter. That's a human being sometimes has that capacity to separate himself. Me, the animal, and me, the mensch. What I did last night, that was me, the animal. What I'm doing today is me, the human being. We don't have such an opportunity. We can't do such a thing. V'harehu teshikur oshoite. And he is like a shikur, or a drunken person, or an idiot. Asher i'efsho loses lehem ormo ulahan higon. The tragedy with such people is you cannot give them intelligent reasoning, nor can you lead them. They are completely uneducatable. Do you remember when we had the shir on Amalek, and we learned Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner's principle in Amalek? Somebody who is unchangeable, who is unreformable, the lakes. And here the Mesilas Yesharim extends that not only to cynicism but also to tzchok, to the one who finds everything a big joke, everything's a laugh, everything's something funny. It's something corrupting to the point where it removes the human being from all levels of taste and intelligence, to the point where you can no longer communicate with him rationally, nor can you educate him. Ki eino mekablim hanhoga. They don't accept leadership. So where's the place for a bit of lightness in Yiddishkeit? Does that mean we've all got to go around with long faces and sad and serious and shaking and trembling? No. Simcha shel mitzvah. We do have simcha. We have unbelievable simcha, deep simcha, real simcha, meaningful simcha. But simcha which triggers off not laughter but joy. There's a big difference between coarse, empty laughter and the deep, warm feeling of joy and of happiness. That's simcha shel mitzvah. that when one's at the point of Simcha Shel Mitzvah, one's at the crossroads, like two railway lines departing from the same point, which way one's going to take depends. Is one going to be triggered off on the line of Tzchok and Holiness, or is one going to be triggered off to the level of greater spiritual achievement? What is the test? The Bessus Yeshorim gives us the test. The degree of Zahirus. Just how meticulous one is about one's mitzvahs. While all this is going on, how meticulous is one about the way one speaks, about one's Lashon Hora, about the brochas one's making on one's food, about the benching at the end of the meal, about Ma'ariv before the meal, about being at the davening the next morning after the meal. What effect has it had on one? Has it made me more spiritually conscious and aware? Has it elevated me, or has it brought me down? If it's brought me down, it was Tzchok v'Hilelus. If it was Simcha Shel Mitzvah, I would be better off thereafter. My benching would be like no benching's ever been before. And if Ma'ariv is going to be afterwards, my Ma'ariv will be like no Ma'ariv's ever been before. And my Shachris tomorrow morning is going to be like no other Shachris has been, and my learning for the next 2 weeks is going to be like it's never been before. That will be the effect of a Simcha Shel Mitzvah. If that's not the effect, you've got to know this is Chik V'Hilelus. Yehov is terribly worried. After the Simcha, he says, there's nothing I could see that my sons did wrong. But if they thought this will have turned out to have been Simcha Tzchok V'Hilelus. It's not just the thought I'm worried about. It's the effect the thought has on the Simcha. I'm not worried about them during the year, says Yehov. Because during the year, at worst, they had a bad thought in their mind. It can happen to anybody. It's not the end of the world. For that, they're not going to get punished. But at the time of Simcha, if they had a bad thought in their mind, you know what that means? That means the Simcha was no Simcha. The Simcha was rowdiness and lightheadedness. And they would have been better off without it. And so let's have Oilus at the end. The most serious of all the Korbonus. One of the real awesome Korbonus. Kami calls his children. The Simcha's over. Now let's just get ourselves geared, let's get ourselves elevated with Oilus to make sure that there was no possible machshava chas v'shalom in any of this. In this area, again, I do not want to paint a one-sided picture and try and pretend that Yiddishkeit is meant to be anything awesome to the point of being gruesome. It's awesome because it is full of awe. But that doesn't mean that it is not joyful. And I've often given you the examples. In fact, it was for that reason that these pictures are hanging up here. And if you look at each one of them, and I've pointed this out many times before, you'll see a face of Simcha with Kovid Rosh. A synthesis of joy and heavy-headedness. Seriousness. Seriousness and joy are not mutually exclusive. That's something which the discotheques are teaching and the Yidden are learning very fast. If you're serious, that's Western entertainment, that's not Jewish Simcha. Jewish Simcha is exactly the other way. If you're not serious, you can't be happy. If you're not serious, it's empty and it's lightheadedness. The only time that there can be real Simcha is when there is the seriousness, when it is deep and when one does understand what one is doing. And you know how worried we are about the tendency today to become Baalei Tshuva in action, but not in Machshava. To change one's actions is hard. I won't say it's easy. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said it's easier to learn through the whole of Shas than to change one midah. But he was talking already of midahs, not just of actions. He was talking already of changing a characteristic, of changing a human trait. To change an action, what do you need? To get into the habit, that's all. Anybody who's got into a habit knows how easy it is to get into a habit. You can take a monkey, and you can teach him to do virtually anything that his physical coordination will allow him to do. It's possible to do. And the more intelligent the animal, the more you can teach him to do. It doesn't change him from a monkey into a mensch. It changes him into a monkey that used to behave like a monkey and used to be accepted by his society as one, to a monkey who now behaves not like a monkey and is not accepted by his society as one. That's all it does. So you've removed him from his own society, but you haven't introduced him into the society of men. You don't become a mensch by acting like a mensch. You become a mensch by thinking like a mensch, by having a value system like a mensch, and that you can't teach a monkey.
The danger of the movement into Yiddishkeit is the satisfaction with change of action without change of thought. And that's what we're examining tonight. To what extent is that serious? How far can that be a problem? So in most things, it's not that problematic. Because we're not talking about people who are putting on their tefillin to show off. Most people who become Baalei Teshuva are not doing it to show off. It's too difficult for that. There's sincerity in what they're doing. So what's the worst? That there's a little bit of show off in it. Okay, there's a little bit of show off. It's not the end of the world. But in matters of simcha, it is the end of the world. When a person new into Yiddishkeit has not been taught how to rejoice, his rejoicing is totally destructive in Chilul Hashem. And he has to watch it. There he has to be careful. The art of rejoicing al pi Torah, to learn how to have a Shabbos, to learn how to have a Yom Tov, to learn how to have a Seudas Mitzvah, to learn how to have a Purim, to learn how to have a Pesach, a Shavuos, a Sukkos. He has to learn how to rejoice al pi Torah, because the dangers of doing it wrong are so immense, the removal of Simcha into Tzchok and Hoilulus. And Mesillas Yesharim goes on to say in the Perek on Tahara, Afa pi she isur kozeh botel b'mi'utzoh. He's talking now we're back to Tahara, the higher levels where a man is doing something and in what he's doing there is a small element of a posel l'machshavah. It's not 100% l'shem shemayim. And even though this isur is botel b'mi'utzoh, it's so small that it really becomes relatively irrelevant. However, such an action which has this mixture of Isur in it cannot be called pure. It can be called a good deed. It can be a mitzvah. That Tahara it can't have. That it doesn't have really. And then he says, Ki hinei kashem she'en eilo al gabi ha-mizbeach shelamato elo soiles nekiyo menupo bishloishis ve'enofo. The same as to bring an oila, a korban, a sacrifice, an oila on the altar in the Beis HaMikdash, needs flour which is has been sifted 13 times. Once not enough. Twice, three times, four times. We're not talking about ordinary flour. We're not talking about baking challahs for Shabbos. We're talking about a korban. The korban has to be absolutely perfect. And the halacha lays down that there has to be 13 siftings of the flour before we can consider it pure enough for the korban, for the mizbeach. Must be toil legamri mikol sig, absolutely cleared of anything impure. Kach in the same way, I efsha la lois al ritzoin mizbecho ha'elyun. One cannot bring onto the Ribbono shel Olam's upper altar li yos me'avidas okel hashlema v'amuvcheres, an avoda, a service to God which is perfect and choice. Only the choicest of actions, hatohur mikol mine sig, that which is completely pure. And he goes on to say, not to say that the Ribbono Shel Olam rejects an action which is not completely pure. Of course not. The Ribbono Shel Olam rewards for whatever we give him, but absolute purity it isn't. And here we come to the tie-up between this evening's shiur and last week's shiur. We learned last week. One of the lessons that we need to learn from a korban, not that we're sacrificing the animal, nor are we sacrificing the animal part of us. We are sacrificing that aspect of our lives which we need in order to feed the animal part of us. All those hours, all those weeks, all those months, all those years of our lives, which we have to dedicate to secular, in secular directions, whether it's eating, sleeping, drinking, working, all the things that go just to sustain ourselves materially, that's what we're sacrificing. We're dedicating that activity to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now we've got it now. That means we're making a korban of our lives, even our day-to-day lives, not just our religious lives. Our secular lives is what we're dedicating to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's that that we wish to elevate to the level of something spiritual and something religious. To elevate. For that you need tahara. For that there must be a certain spiritual purity which one needs to aim for, which one needs to try and achieve as far as possible. In matters which are spiritual already, good. That's one thing. But where one comes onto the material sides of life, the need for tahara is even greater. the need for purity in the material aspects of life is even greater. For if one does a mitzvah, and mixed in the mitzvah is a little bit of a strange thought, good, so it's part of a mitzvah, it's not a complete mitzvah. But if one does a secular act, and mixed with it is basic secularity, it brings it down to a level where it contains no spirituality at all, it's completely meaningless. As we had in the example of the simcha. Simcha is dangerous because it is so physical, and it's so spiritual together. Simcha itself, joy, is spiritual. Yet how do you achieve it? Halacha says, but not without balsam v'yayin, there must be meat and there must be wine. That's what we learned last week. We don't separate ourselves from those things. It's through those things that we achieve elevation. But it's hard and it's dangerous. Much easier to be a Catholic. A Catholic doesn't get married. Catholic priest doesn't drink wine outside the church, hopefully. That's what they're supposed to do. Who knows? But if they live by what they're supposed to live, it's much easier. Where can they go wrong? We have to go out there and achieve simcha. And we have to achieve simcha with these tools which are so destructive and so dangerous if mishandled. And the way we have to achieve that simcha is to achieve tahara. And ensure that in our moments of rejoicing, we aim at least for such a purity where we're doing it l'shem shemayim, we're doing it for the Ribbono Shel Olam, not for ourselves. That there is nothing secular in it and that there is nothing cheap in it. That we're doing it in order to improve ourselves and elevate our lifestyles. And that the consequence of these simchas will be that of great achievement. It is for that reason, exactly as Eev did with his children, that after the Yom Tovim, after Pesach and after Sukkot, there's a Monday, Thursday and Monday of Slichus, and strictly speaking days on which one's supposed to fast. Because we're afraid of the Tzchok and the Hoilavus. We're afraid that even a Yom Tov, mishandled, can turn out to be the wrong kind of thing. Perhaps one of the most dangerous of all Yom Tovs is the Seder night. 4 glasses of wine is a lot of wine on an empty stomach. At least 2 of them on an empty stomach. There are a crowd of people usually. The whole level of the Seder. The question is not what kind of a Seder will I have. Will it be a good Seder or not such a good Seder? There's more serious questions. The questions of will it be a Seder altogether? The questions of wouldn't I perhaps have been better off going to sleep without a Seder altogether? To take things which are so physical and so material, and through them to achieve such great levels of simcha, is possible and is easy if one's doing it with the right machshavas. But we've got to be careful that those actions are done with those machshavas, that as far as each one of us are able, and this is, we're not talking here about superhuman achievements, to sit down to the Seder with a full knowledge that what we're trying to do is not have a meal, and what we're trying to do is not get to supper as quickly as possible. What we're trying to do is to fulfill the mitzvahs of the evening, to fulfill them correctly and accurately, to do them al-pi halacha, and to be involved in the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to be involved in the reliving and the talking of the coming out of Mitzrayim, in such a way that when we finish that Seder, we feel elevated, we feel enriched, we find ourselves on much higher levels of humanity and much higher levels of spirituality, thus ensuring that our Pesach and that the year to come will be one of great achievement.